Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Steve was on the show the other day. Steve Murphy, former DEA agent and co-author of the book out called Manhunters. He was a huge reason that Colombian drug lord Pablo Escobar was killed. Well, let me say this, was brought to justice. He and Javier Pena. It's pretty amazing when you've seen the show Narcos.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It all goes. It's all the same. It's, you know, these stories. It intermixes everything from the Tom Cruise movie. Was it that Made in America movie to Blow with Johnny Depp? That was George Jung.
Mm-hmm.
That was that guy. Because he and a later, I believe his name was part of Escobar's deal. But of course, Escobar and Narcos, like all of these things we've seen turned into movies and television shows. These guys were living at the time it was actually happening.
Born in Tennessee and raised in Princeton, West Virginia. A graduate of Bluefield State College with a degree in criminal justice, he joined the DEA in the mid-80s, working in Miami for 4 years before being transferred to Bogota, Colombia, where along with fellow agent Javier Pena, he was one of the men who brought down one of the most infamous drug lords of all time. And now he tells the story in his new book, Manhunters, How We Took Down Pablo Escobar. Please welcome back to the show, retired DEA agent, Steve Murphy.
Hey, Steve, man, thanks for coming back by.
Hey, Johnny, thank you very much. I'm just wondering, do I need to have a private conversation with Nicole there about the drugs she's taking?
No, right? Well, yeah, and you'll love this. Because, you know, in the book it talks about those guys like to drink a little bit in Colombia, and the hangovers can be brutal. This ER physician we just met has this recovery hydration therapy. They come to your house and give you hangover medicine.
Wow.
Yeah.
I could have used that years ago.
Right? I know. So I'm going through this book, and it's so good, but there's so much to it. There's so many different factors that when you talk about hunting Escobar, we talked about your beginnings, you know, where you came from, how you got into the DEA and into Miami. It turned the time, you know, Miami was the wild, wild west for cocaine. We went from zero to hero with cocaine, and it became an incredible business. I mean, they couldn't even find places to put the money, could they?
That's exactly right. And you know what? Pablo was a big fan of cash, so he wanted those U.S. dollars back down there where he could have his hands on them. Of course, not all of it because he just had so much. But, you know, that's what led to there's a TV show out now called Finding Escobar's Millions. I think it's in the second season.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's all about, is trying to find some of those secret stashes.
And what were those called, the ones in Colombia? Coletas?
Coletas, yeah. Coletas. Basically, the collect is just any place that you can hide something. I mean, it could be a hole in the ground, or it could be a false wall. It could be just about anything, but just a hidey hole.
And you can talk getting to Noriega. At one point, the drug money going through the Panamanian banks, it was in the billions of dollars. He was laundering it. So, like, Escobar's or Noriega's, what was he getting, 5% or 2%?
You know, that was before my time, so I don't know.
But it was something. His cut was like $60 million.
Oh, it was outrageous. You know, the amount of money that was going through there. And then you probably already know this, but I heard you mention Carlos later just a minute ago.
Yeah.
Carlos, you know, was extradited to the United States and convicted. He's in prison. But during the Noriega trial, he was one of the prime witnesses against Manuel Noriega.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was he was represented in the movie Blow with Johnny Depp for George Jung.
Yep. That's true.
And so you fast forward, but, you know, we tend to, as people and citizens who don't understand the job that you had, we blur the lines between entertainment and a movie and real life. And in real life, this was not a good time. Like the movie Blow, it got dark at the end, but you know, it was definitely romanticized. We're talking about thousands and thousands of innocent people killed. Not people that were just involved in the drug trade that knew what the risk was. People who had nothing to do with anything and were just innocents. Like that, the flight that killed 107 people out of, was it Bogota, Colombia? It was out 5 minutes. And Avianica, I think, and they blew up the plane thinking that two agents and a politician were on it.
Yeah, and that's one of the perfect examples of the brutality of Pablo Escobar and his henchmen. You know, it's just, I mean, you fly all over the country, I fly all over the country, United, American, US Air, whatever the airline is. Can you imagine getting on there and you make it 5-10 minutes into the flight and the bomb goes off?
Just
because he thought somebody was going to be on that plane. And the fact is, the people he thought were going to be on there were not on there.
And this is a level of, and he had legend in Colombia. He would do all these things for poor people, and it would, you know, it was a facade. It was just to get the people to love him, and I think it was somewhere about ego, but more about protection and people not giving him up. And as he gained, you know, more power and more money, you know, he became more ruthless because anybody who else tried to start a cartel, he was just killing everybody. He just wanted to murder anybody who was in the same business.
You're exactly right. And you know what? So think about this. I love when we tell audiences this. We were just in Alabama the day before yesterday speaking to a couple different groups down there. If you're in private business, wouldn't you like to have 80% of the market of whatever your business is? I mean, we call that a monopoly, right?
Right.
Well, Pablo, he was able to gain 80% of the market in the world's cocaine, first in the United States, and then he expanded out to Europe and ended up 80% of the cocaine in the world from one man and his organization.
Oh, he had so much money, he tried to pay off the national debt of Colombia at one point he offered to? That's crazy.
Yeah, he did.
That's crazy. And so this guy...
I know, it's just, you know, in the movie Narcos, the guy that plays me is Boyd Holbrook, who's a fantastic guy. And one of his statements that the writers wrote is sometimes truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
That's exactly true with this whole story.
Yeah, it really is. When you, and then you guys, you move there with your wife, who, by the way, crazy brave, and your cat Puff, which made me laugh. And you get there, and it's an inhospitable place. But you're making the best of it, and you're getting closer and closer. And you're, you know, it's not just you guys trying to fight these incredibly evil, incredibly monstrous. There's no limits to their brutality, but you got to worry about everyone you work with, who's been bought and who's legit.
Right. Well, you know, that's true to a degree, but I'm glad you brought that up because we like to make a point out of our presentation is that, you know, when I went to Colombia, I thought all Colombian policemen were corrupt. The truth is, the 3 years I was there, even that 18 months when we were living in Medellin, I mean, we're living with the guys every day. To my knowledge, only 3 low-ranking Colombian police officers were arrested for corruption. And it was at a very, very low scale. I'm not even sure it would rise up to the Medellin cartel level. But what I found is dedicated people who are risking their lives every day that we trusted our lives with. You know, we lived in the same barracks with these guys. We went on operations with them. We ate the same food, drank the same nasty alcohol they have down there. But that's another story.
Well, it would make sense to think, why bother trying to corrupt the lower echelon when, you know, they wanted to go ahead and buy the big fish and get governments and get high-ranking officials?
Well, now he tried.
Yep.
You know, he tried to bribe Colonel Martinez. Colonel Martinez was the head of the search block in Medellin. He was our big boss up there in charge of the 600-man force. He tried to buy Colonel Martinez, and, you know, he had another police officer go in that was a friend of the colonel's, and the colonel ran him out of his house. Now, Pablo, you know, he was threatening to kill Martinez's family. We've got recordings where he told Martinez, he said, "I'm killing your wife and your children both." The apartment building that Colonel Martinez lived in, the other residents put together a letter asking the Martinez family to move out because they were worried that Pablo was going to blow up the building and kill them.
And then you guys start to close in. He knows you're going to catch him. So he creates this scenario with this kind of televangelist Colombian, this religious figure that was on television. And it's a sham. It's a complete sham. You guys turn it on one day, and he's surrendering himself to this religious figure. God knows how much money's exchanging hands there. But not to a real prison. A prison he built himself with his own guards and his own people.
Yeah, you know, and that father, I certainly don't want to speak bad of the clergy. I'm a Christian, but I think that that priest was blinded by the truth simply because, now he was the priest of a very, very poor parish down there in Medellin, and now all of a sudden you got this guy who's you know, funneling money in there to help the people and help the church out. Well, I don't think you can buy your way into heaven. I don't think that's how it works.
No, I don't think so. And so he gets him in there. And Now, this is, like, we're talking Taj Mahal-level stuff, your own cooks, and he's still, and the really terrible part is, you guys are frustrated, you put all this work in, and you know he's still running a drug, huge drug industry just from this basically guarded mansion.
Yep, that was it. And that's what makes the whole thing a big joke, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you've probably seen the pictures of his prison.
Yeah.
There's nothing prison-like about that place at all. It was going to be a country club, and he was going to turn it into a resort when his 5 years was up. He had plans.
Yeah, and then you find out what happens is he's got a couple guys that were in the same business with him, and he finds out that they're holding out on him. And he calls for him. This was his undoing. So he's running everything from in there. And he calls these two guys in, and he starts asking them questions. And I'll let you take the story from there.
Well, what led to it was his sicarios found a stash of money that had been shrink-wrapped and buried. And we report it's anywhere from $10 to $23 million. Now, I found the old report from back in the day. We had reported it was $23 million. It's hard to believe that now, but money, the moisture had gotten inside the shrink wrap, and the money was just rotting away.
Ugh.
And Pablo, he was upset because, in his opinion, he really took it on the chin by surrendering, by taking responsibility, although it was only for one load that he says he unwittingly participated in. And so his sicarios are standing in the background, and he brings in the Moncada and Galliano brothers. Well, Kiko Moncada was one of his childhood friends. He grew up with this guy. That's why he trusted him so much. But through his own ego and his lust for power and his sicarios standing around egging him on, he ends up killing Kiko Moncada, one of his best friends, with a stick right there in the prison.
Yeah.
The sicarios jump on the Galliano brother. They end up killing him. Now, we never found the body parts or anything. The stories are that they dismembered the bodies and cooked them up and put them in like a furnace and cooked the bodies.
Well, most of them. It's the rumor was that what they saw, they sent the charred penis of each one to their wives.
Well, I don't want to say that on the radio.
Oh, it's all right. I think it's important to tell all of it because it really is a savage world that we cannot, as middle America Americans, we just can't wrap our heads around. We think we can, but we cannot understand how far it will go and the symbolism of it all. And it's so now Escobar has to bail because now government officials are showing up. They were asking some questions. He's not going to have any of that, and the whole thing goes to hell.
It does. And so that's why we say, you know, we were very happy when he escaped, to be honest with you, because you know, we knew we were going to get another chance to take this guy out. So it was, like Javier says in our presentation, we were able to put the band back together, and that's when we got after.
And it's pretty amazing, everything that goes down with that. You know, you guys start to track him. They're everywhere he's trying to go. He's trying to get out of the bus. He won't stay two nights in a row. It was the most amount of time he'd spend anywhere.
Right, right. And you know what? If he wanted to go to a soccer game or to a restaurant or go spend a couple nights with his family, he just came and went from that prison as he pleased. There was just a big farce. It's so ridiculous.
And he'd have been fine had he not done that and then went after the government officials. So he might have gotten away with this forever.
Well, and you're right, because he only had a 5-year prison sentence. After that, if he had done his 5 years, he would have been a free man because they absolved him of every other crime he ever committed in his life, including thousands and thousands of murders. And there were no stipulations to take any of his assets. He gets to keep the $30 billion. But his ego just wasn't letting him do that. He couldn't, you know, he just couldn't handle it.
And then, so now he escapes, and now the government gets smart. There's no hiding for him. They literally put a TV ad, like a cheery, nice voiced TV ad saying, "You're the one who turns him in. It is worth $6.2 million in a new life abroad to anyone giving information that would lead to his capture."
Yep. So we started a 1-800 number there at the police base in Medellin, and $5 million of that dollars came from the State Department. There's a fund that goes after fugitives, so we were kind of in control of that. When people would call in, they'd want to talk to the gringos because they knew we had the money.
Yeah, think about that. The poor nation, and somebody offers you $6 million if you have any information at all. I mean, there's no chance that you're going to hold that secret. If you think you can get away with it and not be killed for ratting the guy out, I mean, there must have been a bunch of leads that came in.
Well, there were, but there was a lot of false leads that came in, and a lot of people would see ghosts. You know, so the truth is, None of those leads panned out and lead Mr. Pablo Escobar. A Colombian police officer found Pablo on December 2nd, 1993, and that's how his end came about.
And so tell me what happened then. What were the final moments like? Because you guys, I mean, you worked so hard to get to that moment. What was it like?
It was, once Pablo was dead, I rode out with Colonel Martinez to the site and took all those pictures, and it was, it felt like the weight of the world had been lifted off our shoulders. You know, we were hesitant to start with to go out there because, or as I'm riding out there, I'm thinking, I'm hoping they didn't kill the wrong guy, you know, that this
right.
is another wild goose chase. But once we got there and took a look at his face, the real telling tale, though, was when his mother and his sister showed up. Because when they saw him, their reaction, there was no doubt in my mind that was Pablo Escobar.
And what happens to Pablo's body after that?
Well, took him to the morgue, did the autopsy.
Right.
Then they took him to the funeral home, and he was considered such a folk hero by some of the, poor people,
sure.
to put it bluntly,
sure.
that they went to the funeral home, they broke in, and they got his casket out. They paraded in the streets. They opened the casket so people could touch his dead body. It was kind of gruesome.
Yeah.
By our standards.
Yeah, sure. It's such a great book. It really is. Manhunters, How We Took Down Pablo Escobar, you and Javier. It's. I hope you guys make it to Kansas City for a book signing or a speaking engagement, because I'd love to have you guys in the studio and hang out.
Oh, I'd love that. And if people want to find out more about us, so they can order an autographed copy of our book, if they go to www.deanarcos.com, we'll take care of them.
Excellent. Steve, I sure do appreciate you taking some extra time with me.
My pleasure. Anytime. Look forward to meeting you guys in person someday.
Yes. Take care. Thank you. What do you think about that?
That guy's seen some stuff.
Yeah.
And he's lived to tell.
He's so proper. I wouldn't say that on the radio.
I'm like, well, you're the one.
You guys are over there watching people get their wieners cut off and sent to their wives, and people are blown up out of airplanes, and he didn't want to say penis on the radio.
He didn't want to
say. That is an old school cat right there, man.
He's a funny,
yeah.
I guess you just have to be built a certain way. God love him.
You really do. And you got to believe in the system, and you got to believe in right and wrong. There's no gray area when you're guys like that. It is what it is.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.